Hello.
Is this Gabriella?
Yes, this is Gabriella.
Hi, Gabriella. It's Greg Whiteside at WRTI Studios in Philadelphia. Thank you for giving us some time here. Your work, Concertina Cusqueño, when you heard it for the first time, which would have had to have been back in late October, right?
That's right.
That would have been the first time during the first rehearsal. Can you tell us what it was like? I mean, the anticipation and not knowing exactly how it was going to sound, because I know you heard it in your head. But what was your first thought when you heard it?
You know, it's always a dilemma, you know, for a composer. Is you want to, especially in a high-stakes situation like this, you have fantastic performers, and you really want this to work. And there's a great deal of temptation when you're in your studio to draw on things that you have done before. But really, that's the kiss of death for any artist, is when you repeat yourself. You want to have a stylistic voice that continues, but not through repeating gestures that you've used and employed before. And so you have to try new things. And the analogy that always seems to ground me is to think about it as I'm cooking a dish I've never cooked before. And I know what the individual ingredients sound like. I know what a carrot tastes like. I know what a tomato tastes like, and maybe I haven't combined them in exactly this new way. I'm not following a recipe. I'm coming up with a new dish of my own, and the first time I get to taste it is when all the guests have arrived for dinner. Mm. We all taste at the same time, and then when you hear it, you think, okay, of course it needs more seasoning, it needs more salt, or what have you, and the rehearsal is like that. Mm. So my first thought is, did I at least get it into the ballpark? And did I at least get the balance right? Did I at least achieve this new sound, maybe a new blend between timpani and harp? And it's punctuated by a duet between piccolo and bass clarinet, which is basically what you have in this concertino. That was a new sound I was going after. And so you can listen to it vertically like that, and instantly you're at work. You know, it's not my first time at the rodeo now. And so already I'm going in, and I'm already thinking, okay, what are the things that need to be adjusted quickly. And if you have really good musicians like this Wolf voice of an orchestra with Silly, they will start doing that without you having to say anything. I'm a very hands-off kind of composer in the rehearsal situation, and I've had the luxury of being able to be that I've worked with such great creative minds that they can start understanding what the ideas are and season the darn thing, you know, maybe ask the clarinet to play out a little more, maybe to speed the music up a little bit more so that we can give it some life flow, some blood to the music. Because you're not just listening to it vertically for the balance and the blend of the sound. You're also listening to it horizontally, how it flows. And if there's a certain kind of stylistic flair that is coming to life. And for the concertino, I really wanted to, well, you mentioned my various ancestries. But also, this one has a touch of the Britten sound to it.
The Britten violin concerto. Isn't that timpani motif right from the Britten violin concerto?
Exactly. You know, and I remember the first time I heard that, I was thinking, it's amazing, this Benjamin Britten, this man who can be so inventive with just a few notes. All he does is toss it to an unusual instrument, and it comes to life. And somebody that can have such an effect with such economical means, it's really a master. And so I wanted to pay homage to the spirit. So you see all of that. And so I was going through all of that within about 5 seconds on the first rehearsal.
No.
So it wasn't any one thought. It was many thoughts going
through
my
head. And you were able to hold your tongue? You didn't step in and say, no, I want you to put a little more salt or a little more pepper in this area? You were able to just sort of let it play out?
Yeah, I'm very good at just laying off. I mean, the first time an orchestra, no matter who they are, when they read through a piece, they need to get to know it. And the things that you might say are obvious. Of course somebody came in wrong. Or of course, you know, this wasn't quite together yet. And actually, often the fault is in the score. It's not in the musicians. Of course we need to change the dynamic that the silly composer put in there. We need to make it louder, not softer. And those are the things that I don't have to comment on, that sensitive musicians will fine-tune themselves in the course of normal rehearsals.
Now, we are talking about the Philadelphia Orchestra, after all, you know, so they do know how to play.
they do know how to play. And Yannick, even though they know how to play, he's a great colleague. I mean, he kept turning back while I was in the audience and using his thumb up, down. Did you like it? I mean, he's very inclusive, and I think he's just a beautiful soul.
That's nicely put. Now let's fast forward ahead to the first performance. It was very well received. I mean, I know that everybody that I've spoken to that was there, I was there. We were very, very impressed by the work, and many, many good things were said about it. You know, keeping in mind that you obviously are very intelligent. I think I read someplace that everybody in your family, it's the law, had to have a PhD, so that you're all very, very, very smart. But, you know, keeping in mind that you're never going to be completely happy with anything, how did you think the first performance went? And tell us just how you felt about it. Was it exciting? I mean, what a feeling it must have been there with an audience full of people, an inaugural season with Yannick being the music director, and here is your piece being played first on the program. Tell us what you felt.
Well, you know, I went into the right field. I mean, I love my job. You know, I love what I do, and that high that you feel, I wish people could step in my shoes and feel it. And I think it's one of the arguments for the creative arts. And there's this overwhelming sense of gratitude also. You feel like so much, oh my gosh, all this hoopla, all this fuss, all this energy, all of this is because of something that I dreamt up. And there's this sense of gratitude for that too. And I think about the years of training that each and every one of these musicians on stage is putting into this piece. And you hopefully come away with a greater sense of responsibility too, as well, to continue, you know, delivering good work and to have something to say. I like to think that I'm aiming for a seat as a cultural commentator, not just somebody that's fashioning together sounds, that there's something that moves people, but it's also a commentary on the times that we're living in. So it's a pretty intense experience when you go through this and you're finally seeing the resolution of all this hard work for this one project in the form of applause, the form of the smiles on the musicians' faces, and even my family is able to attend. They've seen everything. They've seen me from the humble beginnings. What do they think? They see the big picture, and there's nothing else like it.
It's not a musical background that you come from, though. Is that correct? You were not...
Not professionally, no. My grandmother on the Jewish-American side was talented. There is a musical gene floating around in the Frank side of the family. Her brother, my great-uncle, was talented also. And it's the same ability. We all perfect pitch. We can extemporize quite easily at the piano. And they could play songs off the radio. And I have many memories sitting with Lucy Frank at the piano because she identified it. I mean, she was looking for it in my uncle and my dad, but they didn't have it. And she saw it in me right away, and we would sit and improvise together. And she would play me Gershwin and a lot of sheet music. And so it's in the family for sure.
This is your dad's side of the family, which would be the Lithuanian Jewish part of your heritage, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Now, the music of yours that I hear more of the Peruvian Andes. I hear the South American side. And I wanted to ask just a quick musical question. Out of this apparently simple, but very, as you say, with Britain, it may be simple, but as the Italians say, tutto è la semplicità, everything is simplicity. And out of that fertile seedbed grows this incredible multicultural thing. And that's, I guess, what you were referring to when you talked about being able to say something and to say something about our times. And these are certainly multicultural times. But, you know, I was absolutely enchanted by what it was that grew out of that simple Britain motif. It just became something that was so intriguing and interesting without ever becoming overly complicated because, you know, Mozart was so simple. That's what made him so great. It sounds like any idiot could do it, but only Mozart did. So how did you do that? I mean, how are you able to take something and how did it get started? I mean, did you just all of a sudden that timpani motive appeared in your head, or, you know, what was it that started you thinking and planning? I'd love to get an idea of the artistic flow of how you approach this.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I have two different takes. One is a very, might be the influence of my father, who's a Mark Twain scholar at Berkeley, and we've always had great stories being told in our household, and I do very well if I, even if it's just a, for it's just a creative apparatus, I do very well if I imagine a story. And what I imagined was, what if I had been given this opportunity to take Benjamin Britten with me to Peru? And to, you know, what pubs would I take him to? What restaurants would I take him to? What sites would I take him to? And what kind of conversations would he and I have? If there was a possibility that he and I could be artistic colleagues. And I've been so enamored with his fascination with folklore and stories and his aplas and his chima music and his, all of his work. I think it's enervated by that kind of spirit. So once I have that, then there is a kind of wit that seems natural. If I'm going to write witty music, I need to have a lot of back and forth. And that's how I came up with the idea of concertino, that there's this built-in drama between the four string principals and between them and the treaty. Then there's this idea of a journey, which tells me, okay, it's giving me some sort of sense of a structure, the overall structure. It has to start somewhere, maybe it can go somewhere, and then maybe there's a sense of return, but when we come back, I can't have the motif, as simple as it was when it began, return exactly the same. It has to have been transformed by having gone on this journey.
It changes, so, as we all do, you know, life does that to us. Yeah, I understand.
Exactly, you know. So I try to find musical metaphors for that. And then I mentioned earlier that I extemporize easily, and so I use that to my benefit. I might sit with a simple motif, and either in my studio or at the piano, because I'm one of those that composes both at the piano and away from the piano, I'll just start playing around as if I'm in my playpen. And I don't suffer from writer's block. I actually have the opposite problem, which I get too much coming to me, and I
it
have
just
to start
spills
shoving
out of your
away.
Pen, right? I understand. Pure genius. Yeah, we understand what genius is.
No, it comes. You know, I mean, my main teacher was William Bolcom, who had a similar issue. And what you have to do is pick the best ideas, and then you get to hard work, and the hard work is to make a better version of that idea. You trim away the fat. You want an idea that has legs, that's actually going to lead naturally to the next idea. It's not self-contained. Kind of like playing pool. One shot, you have to be thinking about the next one. You don't just think about each one. Otherwise, you're not going to have longevity. You'll eventually run out of moves. It really felt like one idea moved to the other, and Britten's a master at that. That's another
it
way
he
was
like
a model
that
for me.
It sounded like that, too. It was really, I thought, so beautifully developed, where I think Bernstein put it eloquently when he said that one note is the logical consequence of the one that came before. I won't keep you too much longer. I just wanted to ask you one other question, because I know that a work such as the Concertino Cusqueño is a kind of, it's a kind of a child. I mean, you've given birth to something. And children, as we know, have children. So when you were using the pool analogy of setting up your shots and being able to see like four or five in advance, not just the one that you're going to hit, does this then become fertile ground for new ideas for somebody as prolific as you seem to be? Has the pen been emptying very quickly as this concertino has given birth to new things?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that wound up on the editing room floor. And yeah, great ideas, but they just didn't belong in this piece. Sometimes I have to very regretfully give up some ideas. I felt like I really wanted to work on them, and I realized, you know, it's just not finding a hospitable home. And I tend to save all this material. I work very hard at it. There's some magic there that can come to life, and I stick them in binders. And if you were to look in my studio and in my basement, I have, oh my gosh, 50, 60 binders from over the years now, and full of ideas. And over the years, categories have emerged from these ideas that, you know, that only make sense to me. It could be, I don't know, orchestra music with a lyrical cast, or sometimes I would tire some of the binders. I'm no longer interested in those ideas. But Yeah, I mean, it really did give birth to ideas that I hope will find a project down the line.
Mm. I hope so. Anna, we wish you all the best. You're in New York now, right?
Actually, in the moment, I am in Denison, at Denison University in Granville, Ohio.
I'm participating in a
small new music conference here.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's good. You're all over the place. I look forward so much to one day meeting you and being able to talk to you. You're a total delight to speak to. I mean, just, you know, obviously full of energy and intelligence and enthusiasm and just bursting with ideas. And you are truly an amazing and interesting woman. And it comes through in your music. It really does. So we'll be talking about you. And I enjoyed this conversation with you.
Thank you, Greg.